dear listener. Welcome to 10 Laws with East Forest, the podcast. This week, I have Gordon Ogden and Kate Swarm. They are both from Walter Productions, or more specifically, Walter Yoga. And they are a crew of folks that do all sorts of crazy events pretty much year-round. They're based out of Phoenix. You know, they're these kind of people who have, like, multiple giant art cars. I think they have 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I don't even know. It's a lot. And they roll these things in, and it's like instant massive party or event. And I know they have their heart in a lot of transformational experiences for people. And they brought me down to Phoenix. I did an event with Marissa Wepner in their spot down there. And we're talking about doing one on September 15th down in Phoenix, an East Forest ceremony event. So I'm planning on it. I hope they are too. But I know while I'm recording this, they're actually at Bonnaroo putting together a massive, whole restorative area of that festival with one of their art cars. So I think the art car is like a giant beetle bug. So if you're a burner, maybe you've seen these things. But they're from Walter Productions, and they've always been super kind, super cool people. So I thought I'd get them on together, and we could dive into the world of putting on these events, how they do it, what comes up for them. We talked a bit, actually quite a bit, about social media, and they both are kind of yoga people, and that's sort of, for a lot of yogis, that's a way for them to connect with others, is through social media, and that's become a bit of a phenomenon. And I play devil's advocate, of course. I hope I was polite, but I'm not judging. I just want to dive into that, like what comes up and what is that whole thing, that whole crazy thing. So we had a great conversation, and I'm looking forward to that. The East Forest Ceremony Concert Series has been going really great, and we're planning more of those. So yeah, do stay tuned, and we'll announce when more of them are coming up and official. But I got July 18th, New York City, June 22nd through 24th, Ontario Groove Festival, and Portland, Oregon, and Detroit, Michigan. Those are both in August. And the East Forest Retreat, September 27th through 30th in Boulder, Utah. That's always such a profound experience. I love getting FaceTime, and the people who come to that, it just sort of self-selects. It's pretty beautiful. There's a couple spots left for that, especially if you like to camp and want to get cozy in a bunk room, which actually they're super great, amazing, great deals. So check it out, eastforest.org/retreat. Everything else is there too, like tours and music, as you know. And you can write us messages, say hi, at info@eastforest.org. That's also where you can send your PayPal donations to support this podcast. That's info@eastforest.org. And thank you for scrolling down and reviewing the podcast. Share it with your friends. We're just getting off the ground. And, I put a lot of work into this because I believe in the people that I can bring on. And I'm just trying to make the world a better place. So thanks for sharing and doing your part. So please do enjoy this conversation. This is Kate Swarm and Gordon Ogden. Here we go. Guys, thank you. We're finally getting this ball rolling. You can totally do whatever you like. No one's going to see this. It's purely audio.
Perfect.
So okay. You don't have to put those clothes back on, Gordon. You can just keep them off.
No. I felt so comfortable with you.
Yeah, I you know how it is in the yoga world. It's just like, be free. Be free.
I know.
We all believe in freedom.
Absolutely.
So Kate and Gordon, you are in an undisclosed location in Phoenix, which is really just different rooms in the same house. So we can do this. So you guys are in Phoenix, and I wanted to talk to you because the two of you, as far as I understand it, get together and work on a little something called Walter Yoga and Walter Productions. Is that right? Am I getting that mostly correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And through this, we got to work together. Kate, you and I grew up in the same town, which is just happened. Well, it's called synchronicity, but that's not how we know each other.
No. And so I live there now, and you grew up there, right?
Yeah. my 18 years, or really 17 and a half. I moved there when I was 9 months old. I picked it on a map with my parents, and I grew up there, went to high school there, went to elementary school, Salem, Oregon.
The capital of Oregon. So you picked it on a map.
Yeah.
So your family, or was that you specifically?
What do you think? I was 9 months old. It's like, I didn't have a lot of say in the matter.
You knew exactly what you wanted.
I was born in New Hampshire. Yeah.
Okay.
But I can't really say I have much, you know, affinity or knowledge of New Hampshire. We went west, and that's where they still are. Everybody's still out there, and that's where I grew up. And, you know, more recently was in Portland for a spell. But that's not how we know each other anyway, is my point. It's not like it's that small of a town.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, how those things happen.
Yes.
The synchronicity.
Yes. So
things like that.
Someone like yourself, Gordon, I know you're based in Phoenix. Kate, how in the world did you end up making your way to Phoenix on the regular like you are right now? I want to just get a little bit into what you guys are up to so people have a little background on that before I get too deep into the back end and what's going on.
Yeah, so let's set the groundwork for what Walter is. So Walter Productions is a production company built from the dust of Burning Man.
Mm-hmm.
We are an artist collective, if anything, that has come together to offer our gifts to the world and do something larger than we could do alone. So when you, and I'm sure you've felt this before, Trevor, that you, when you join with other artists and you share a vision and you come together, you can do something together that's much more profound, much more impactful than you could do alone. And that's really what Walter is and what we do. And that really started with creating one art car, Walter the Bus. That's where we get our name from, for Burning Man. And it has just grown and grown and grown. And Gordon and I, we really, what our focus is on the wellness components, or when we go out to a festival, making it intentional what we're doing there. So we are both of our background is in yoga. That's kind of where we found ceremony and found our ability to become those holders of sacred space. And from there, we've been able to marry these two fields of festivals, really, gatherings, and then sacred ceremony, whether it's yoga or meditation or sound healing. And we facilitate that, and we bring in a lot of different artists for these activations and events and gatherings. And here in Phoenix, this is where we're based. And so when we're not out traveling around, we're here and we do things in Phoenix. We have a studio here. So
yeah,
that's kind of what we brought you in for.
And yeah, we did
all the love, light, and lasers.
Yeah. Gordon, did you meet Kate at Burning Man? Or how did you guys connect?
No, that's a funny story. We actually, we met through Instagram and Instagram yoga. And there's a whole little community of yogis and a lot of yoga photography. And we've met 4 years ago through these yoga challenges. And we ended up hosting some challenges together. And from there, we're able to meet at Wanderlust at Squaw Valley a few years ago, after kind of being friends through Instagram. And then from there, she said she wanted to go to Burning Man, and we were already kind of pretty established in Walter, and that was an opportunity for Kate to have her first burn 4 years ago now, I think, Kate, right? This will be your fifth?
Yeah, I think so. It's been, you know, I don't know.
And it's
time no longer makes sense since I've been to Burning Man. So
from that point, we became fast friends and realized that she could help co-produce and get more involved with Walter. And since then, our families have become best friends, and
our daughters are the same age, and her husband Steve and I climb and hang out. And yeah, it's just been a really amazing friendship.
It's funny that you guys sort of originally connected from Instagram in a sense. And I've always thought like the Instagram yoga thing is such an interesting, strange new beast because
it is, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's like, and my friend Day, who does the morning altars thing, and he's also like built a lot of his career has come from Instagram, and it works very well, I suppose, because it's visual. And his work is literally visual art.
Yep.
And yoga is not strictly visual art, right? And so it's through this medium that's taking pictures and poses. And you'd think that in some ways it wouldn't necessarily translate. But nonetheless, there's become this phenomenon. You're both sort of in that world of Instagram being like sort of what's helped you like go into more of a public stage.
Absolutely.
I mean, do you find any irony to that or kind of like strangeness to that? I mean, what comes up for you besides the fun of it?
It can be strange, but it only takes a minute to, we wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't Instagram. Truly. Yep.
No,
We wouldn't. And we wouldn't, I mean, all of the fun things that we've been able to do through Walter and through Burning Man, so much of that has been through relationships that have come from Instagram. It's crazy. If there was one platform or one medium or one connector, that's what it's been for us.
It's funny you say that because on this podcast, I've had a lot of conversations where social media has come up as a subject. And I'm someone that speaks about it, not in any specifics, more broadly about how new it is, how powerful it is, and how I think, speaking from my own experience, the kind of the issues I've had with it and how it messes with my brain and how, for me, it brings up a sense of like competition and almost like fear in a way. And I've had to kind of pull out of it I just noticed I felt better as a person.
Yep.
But I know as a business person, that's not really possible. Like I actually have to I have to pay Rachel, who's on the management team, who I work with every day. I give her content, but she puts it up.
Yep.
Right? Because that sense of removal right now is somehow, it's helping me. It's important to me. But I made a lot of people who like, they really enjoy it and they don't have any problems with it. And, you know, they like putting content out there and.
I think it is an interesting thing. It's very, I see both sides of it.
Do you guys have any problems? I mean, personal, like, do you have any times where you're just like, this is hard for me? Or like,
I think we both do, for sure.
Is it like a burden or is it more just like, is it hard to be a part of this world where everything's quantified in a sense?
I didn't used to, because, it was a creative outlet for me. Mm-hmm. When I started Instagram, I had a young babe at home.
Yeah.
I didn't have a way to express myself. I didn't have a way to connect with other people, especially find community specifically geared towards where I was at in my stage of evolving. It's hard to meet people who are going to connect with you on certain things, but not when you have access to millions of people. It's just like, I've made this metaphor or told this little story often. And I think everybody, when you're growing up and you're going through school, there's times when in grade school, junior high, high school, when you're like, I am the absolute weirdest person. Nobody gets me, but I know there's somebody. There has to be. I mean, I am watching movies, I hear music, and it speaks to me. I know there's other people out there.
Yeah.
I can feel their ripples. I can feel their vibrations moving through the universe. I know there's community out there for me, but I know I'm stuck and I'm removed from it. Social media is a way to reach people who can reach you back, which is really beautiful. And especially when you feel when you have isolation, whether it's, through location or you know, I was with my little all the time. I couldn't really go out and always have other means of self-expression.
Yeah.
So this, it was a beautiful outlet for me. I mean, it served me so much. I mean, so much healing for me happened on social media, which is, I see the irony of it now because now I'm surrounded by it. Or, so my experience was so pure, and the what I was receiving back, I mean, was just like other heartfelt moms going through transformation and raising children and reclaiming their bodies, which is a lot of what my yoga journey was after my daughter was born, was reclaiming my body and owning myself. Once my daughter is now going out into the world and finding herself, who am I? And that self-exploration. So I got to connect with people on that level. So many people daily. I'm inspired by them. They're inspired by me. And it was such a positive, beautiful thing. But just like anything. So it started to grow. And then I was almost put into this category of like an Instagram yogi.
And which is a funny phrase in itself. You know, it's like, yeah. It's sort of
a funny phrase,
a symptom of the modern age.
Yeah. And then, so then I started to, I guess, meet people or understand that there's other motivations for doing social media. And then I, because of that, because I gained traction, you know, it is, it's such a nice way to let people know what you're doing. And if you're an artist like yourself, or you have something that you're creating, you have a gift to offer the world, it's a really nice way to be like, hey, I have this gift. Here's how you can get it.
It is. It's a nice direct communication. Are you concerned at all about putting your weight on a company that could disappear? And then how would you reach those people?
Yeah. And so for me, it's just a, it's just an outlet, right?
Yeah.
It's just,
it's a tool.
I'm going to be me. It's a tool. I'm going to be me, whether Instagram's there to capture it or not.
Yeah.
So, it's just like anything, do it for joy, get something from it, and let it benefit you and your life.
In
a positive way.
There's a phrase David Mamet says about writing scenes. And I think it's like, get in late, get out early. And it's like, that makes good drama. Yeah. It's like, maybe that's a good rule with social media.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think there is something to why it's popular. Why is Instagram a popular outlet for yoga? Well, I think you go back to what yoga is. And it's not just the physical asana, right? The physical asana is a metaphor for an emotional state of being. Warrior pose is a stance full of strength and fierce grace.
Wouldn't you say it's poise. Like, ultimately, didn't it come from just, it's sort of like Buddhism in a sense of a way of living. It's a way to get through living and helping. And the asana is part of that. But I mean, you got to admit, Gordon, what do you think? Don't you think that, like, I don't know. I mean, the yoga world in itself, all the transmutations it's taken in the past 15 years, 10 years, especially in the US.
Sure.
And Instagram yogi stuff is part of that. Like, what comes up for you when you being part of that?
Oh, I think it's anything that can introduce people to the yogas. And so if that's, you know, whether it's, I mean, there's people that are practicing asana and doing yoga poses with goats and beer in the real world.
Yeah, it's true.
They're posting that to now Instagram. And you know what, if that's what it takes to bring, you know, someone into themselves and understand a little bit more about themselves and help to I think become more aware of who they actually are. And if it's Instagram that was a catalyst for that, I know several people who they saw someone else post a yoga picture, they did the same thing, and then 4 years later, they're now certified teachers.
And sort of lighting a fuse in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's made it accessible to a community that is far more the ability to reach people all over the globe that have the same interests. Like Kate was saying, you know, now you can find the other weirdos that like to do yoga with goats and beer, or whatever you think
The
flavor that works for you. Right.
Do you think that those goats and the beer or music live during a class, which I do sometimes, is ultimately a distraction, though, from what's really going on? I mean, do you think like it'd be better if we just get back to the basics, or do you think these are just more ways to hook people in a modern world where everyone's distracted?
Well, I think that's it. I think the attention span, you know, there are those people that would want to come into an environment that was unplugged and could drop into that space or give that a try. But if we have the attention span of a gnat or an ice cube or whatever it is, it seems like
there has to be. I think it's a goldfish, to be honest. Like
the goldfish, exactly.
There was a study that goldfish's attention span was something like, I don't know, it was 3 seconds, and the average person now is lower than that. It's 2.4.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think if more people practiced yoga, you know, that the world would be a better place. And if it takes goats, or if it takes lasers, I mean, there's a lot of things that Kate and I work with that some people would misunderstand and think that, oh yeah, we do, you know, just this one rave yoga and not necessarily understand what's really possible with, you know, with state-of-the-art lights and sound. It's the ability to take people on a journey and take them further and deeper than they thought possible. And so I can't say enough. It's hard for me to criticize Instagram because it's brought so much. It's brought this connection. It's brought so many things. But I'm definitely in a different space with it today than I was a year ago or 2 years ago. I feel
What's
like
that? Kate and
I think it's trying to balance the real world. We've been able to use Instagram as a catalyst to create in the real world, and so you know, it started with creating and then posting, and knowing that, wow, if we use this in a way that allows us to meet other people and create new opportunity in the real world, then that's going to be more sustainable than relying on, let's just grow more followers and do more influencer marketing. I mean, that's really where it seems like
you
it's
guys,
gone. It's like, here, I want to pitch products that I'm not really into, but this brand knows that I now have a connection to, you know, thousands of yogis. If I hold up a, you know, a drink or something, you know, it's just, it's lost a little bit of the importance for me, only because it's also different. Instagram with the algorithms, and when you post now, it's a lot different than it was when we first started, because you could post something and you knew people would see it.
Yeah, now it has changed.
Now you post and you don't know that anyone's actually seeing. And so it becomes, it just becomes different, you know, because then people would say, well, why are you doing it if nobody sees it, or is that what it's all about? Well, engagement is part of the reason why you post and you create. At the same time, I like the actual mechanics and the ritual, or the, you know, the process of creating art, creating anything in photography and yoga. It's a perfect medium.
Yeah. Instagram. Yeah. Well, as you said, you know, it is a ritual putting that up. And in some ways, like, this is an early form of kind of virtual reality. Like, and that's what I think a lot of people are tapping into, is that there's a pushback when they find that they're tapping into this world physically and in their mind more often than they would like. Like, they're, you know, because, you know, some of the greatest designers on this planet are working for these companies to do things like determine the delay time between when you open the app to when the notification pops up to how many likes or something you have, and how that dopamine release happens in your brain. And their job is successful by how much time you spend on the platform. So it's like they're beholden to the shareholders. So in a sense, like, all that really matters to them is like hooking people in. And that's how they are successful. And so I know a lot of people are noticing how a lot of their own mental power and their attention goes to this in their off time. Mm-hmm. And that's where they try to like find this line between like, yes, it's a tool, like any tool. It's very powerful and useful. And it's connecting them with all these people. But they have to figure out their own discipline for making that work in their own life in a way that it's like they can be really honest about their full experience with it. And in some ways, like the bigger you get, you know, with these things, the more powerful that tool is for you in your hand. I think the trickier that dance is. And I'm not at all slacking on you guys. I'm just playing like devil's advocate for the sake of interesting conversation. Yeah. No, like you're right. It is how we ultimately met. And it's also how you guys translate into a lot of real world events, face-to-face experiences. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge advocate for how sound and lights and is this alchemy that all comes together to essentially create things that's magical, dreamlike, shift our consciousness. So, you know, that's a great thing to do.
And I think that's what it's really all about, right? Is finding that peak state of consciousness and providing that for people and giving them something, giving them a place to experience that for positivity, for growth. And, you know, people can have that through a story that's written. People have that through visual cues, such as a photograph, such as a painting, something like that. And when you see a yoga asana, a posture is meant to evoke an emotional response. So, of course, there is something very powerful about seeing someone in a warrior pose up on a mountain. That's gorgeous. There's something there that evokes an emotional response in you that you can relate to, you can feel, you're put in that space. And then when that photo is coupled with the person who's telling the story about what it meant to them, the feeling behind it, and something that they're working through in their personal life, I think that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So any platform that can be shared on, and of course, just like anything, it can be confused, it can be manipulated, it can be used for the wrong reasons. And then ultimately the tool can backfire.
It's a snake that eats its own tail. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just a balance like anything. If it benefits you, if it serves you, use it. If it doesn't, it's not for you. Just like with the goat yoga thing, right? If you love baby goats, like go roll around with a goat, please. Like pet that little cute thing, get on its level and have the time of your life. I'm never going to tell you not to do that. And I think you should do that. And anything, go do that. If you know that you can connect over a glass of beer with your friends, go do the beer yoga. Go get a beer with your friends and then sit down and listen to this yoga teacher tell you how wonderful the universe is and how you're going to make it better.
Well,
that's a great thing. Go do it. Go do that.
Sure. Well, I love.
But if it's not for you, don't do it. If it's not for you, don't do it. If it's for you, go get it.
Well, let me just take a step back. I mean, you guys each are leading. This is not a typical path. And when you grew up, these things were not on the plate. You know, you don't hear a lot of 3-year-olds who say, you know, I want to be on Instagram and produce yoga events with lasers. Maybe they will now. But like, I'm curious for each of you, Gordon, where did you grow up? And just give me a quick rundown of like what your parents did and how you kind of made your way into these interests.
It's so good. It's going to make so much sense.
Oh, well, I can't wait.
Everything's going to make sense. Ready, set, go, Gordon.
I was born in Louisiana, but I didn't really live there very long. I was
raised in Thailand, in Germany, in the Philippines. And my dad was in the military. He was a colonel in the army and then was a spy in the CIA. And so he traveled the world. And then my mom worked for the Senate in D.C. And so I went to high school in D.C. My parents separated when I was in high school. And I lived with my mom in D.C. area. She went to, she worked, like I said, for the Senate. For like 30 years or 25 years. And then and I came out to Arizona in 88 for school at ASU.
So your parents, I mean, your father, I'm guessing, was a little strict or disciplined?
He was, yes, he was very strict, very disciplined.
And your mother sounds like someone who probably is fairly disciplined herself for that kind of work.
Yeah, she was fairly, I mean, she was definitely supportive of you know, the family. My parents moved 26 times in 25 years.
You're kidding me.
No. And so they moved all over the world. And my mom really was left at home to raise my brothers and myself. And my dad was, you know, on assignment all over the world. And yeah, so he wasn't there all the time. But, you know, I feel like my parents were certainly there for me. And but he was definitely strict and manners and discipline. And
were they religious?
Not religious at all. So that's
like atheist or more just agnostic?
Just more agnostic. I was introduced to Buddhism when I was 16, and through a friend in high school, and have really that's kind of been my practice since I was 16.
So you were introduced to a bit of meditation, sitting practice, zazen, as it were, at that age?
It's Nietzsche and Buddhism.
Oh,
and
chanting.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah, more chanting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Kate, were your parents religious at all?
No.
Also atheist or agnostic?
Yeah, something of that nature. My mom moved from Holland, from the Netherlands, when she was 5 years old. And so her parents both grew up under Catholic rule before World War II. And then after World War II, the Catholic Church was not celebrated for some of the things that happened during that time. And so most people in Europe, in the Netherlands, they moved away from Catholicism. And like our family has stories of why it was, why it just made sense to them to no longer
step away
from religion.
That a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't, you know, it clearly wasn't the answer, whatever answer people are searching for. The church wasn't it. So my mom is not religious. And my dad just didn't have a religious family as well. So the only really religion I got when I was growing up is my mom would send us to Sunday, like these little Sunday school weekend camps, like Kiwanis.
Oh yeah.
Because that sort of thing, because it would, I hate to call my mom out, but it's like free childcare.
Yeah.
she would send all three of us to these little weekend camps. But we did not grow up in the church, so we had no idea how to interact with these people. I did not get it.
Yeah,
I was like, what are...
I had similar background.
You guys seem really into this, and I don't get it.
Right, right.
You take this very seriously.
What?
And, I mean, I like the graham crackers and singing stories with you, or singing songs with you, but...
Yes.
This is a bit intense.
There is a similarity. I've always wondered if this is the case. Like both of you and myself, my father is an atheist, very proud of that. My mother is a bit agnostic. There's a Woody Allen joke about that like his dad was an atheist, his mother's agnostic, and they would always fight about what to believe in. But basically, like, you know, I feel like sometimes folks who grow up as adults in this day and age who have a certain thirst for spirituality, I'm wondering if there is sometimes that similar background. Like it's not so much a reaction from running from a difficult religious child. It's more like they didn't have it. They were bereft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a hunger to kind of find their own, and sort of a postmodern search they come upon a form of spirituality. I've always thought that it's more difficult to come up with your own sense of ethics and religion. Like if everyone had to form their own personal church, that's a lot more work if you really do that honestly than following a set of rules that someone else puts down that really don't have much meaning to you. But you know, all three of us had parents with a similar religious or non-religious background. And all three of us in some point in our adulthood or formative years were searching for something, finding that meaning because we were never really told what it was. And, you know, in the Western world, and I consider Western Europe part of that too, it's not part of the culture really, right? Like we don't have those rites of passage. We don't have a way of saying this is the, like we don't have the bar mitzvah, if, even if it had, it's like, you know, real weight to it anymore. And so it's funny, not funny, but it's interesting that like in a sense, yoga, I feel like there's a dot there to connect.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, it's just a ceremony and gathering people and being amongst other human beings while feeling the same state of consciousness is so core to who I am. I long for that. Well, that is
what role does psychedelics play in that for you, or what did it in for connecting the dots for you being where you are?
I think that was secondary. I think that was, it's just another tool that it's just another tool for exploring that. It came, I've sought it out always, in different forms. And then I think it's just, as you get older, you become more intentional about things and you can be like, I'm doing this for this purpose and this serves me in this way. So I'm going to foster that. So now, you know, there's all kinds of tools I use for exploring different states of elation. And I've gotten pretty good at them and know which, when, where, how, and the setting to use it in and everything like that, whether it's a drum circle or a yoga class or a meditation, you know, all kinds of fun things that I do. But it's so core to who I am. And I feel like it's just, it pulls at me. Like that's what drives me, is to find these settings to connect with people in this place of union. And so I was even at racking my brain the other day. It doesn't seem, if you look at my family, where did this come from? I just like had to ask the question, like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like it's in my roots. But you look at my mom and my dad and their grandparents and they seem so distant from that. But
a lot of that's generational, you know, I mean, a lot of that just wasn't around. Like my grandmother was a yogi in the very early 70s in Indiana and she just got into it and decided to learn how to do hatha yoga and got trained and opened up. There was not a studio. She just started teaching it. But I mean, that was like, that was the beginning. So it wasn't really an option in the 50s. There wasn't a lot of self inquiry on that level other than like the church and some scotch, you know, it's a different era.
Exactly. And so I think it's really, it was, you know, after I started reflecting on it, it was definitely a failure on my part to understand where my family is at and these times when they have done that or they do do that and the different ways that they do foster ceremony, not necessarily, it's not going to be a drum circle. It's not going to be chanting, but it is ritual. It is ritual very much. And it's, you know, little things from my grandmother making, whenever we would visit, making us a waffle and tea before bed and having something simple like that, or gathering family together on holidays. Or there's this story of my grandfather, who is an engineer from the Netherlands, and he is an engineer to the T, and he's still alive, but he is very much raptured in dementia right now. Mm-hmm. He can't even respond or speak. So it's too bad to see that decline in him. But when I knew him, he was all about math. He was very much practical Opa, and his humor was also the same way, where it's not like a big belly laugh. You're just like, oh my gosh. And he had this thick Dutch accent and was always doing very dorky things. And I could never imagine my grandfather fostering ceremony. But this story that kept coming up for me that I kept remembering was when I was a little girl, he told me about right after World War II, he was in his 20s. And he was an engineer, and they were building a dam in Holland. And this dam had all these steel bars in this dam. And him and some of his engineering buddies, they got this idea to turn this dam into a speaker. And I don't know the mechanics of it, but
so that's a pretty badass boombox or a subwoofer there.
Yeah. So he's tried to turn this dam. So they didn't have permission. And then they were in a war-torn country that had nothing. There was no ceremonies happening. There was not a lot to celebrate. And they didn't have permission to do this. But what they did was they went out overnight, and somehow they rigged up this giant dam. And they turned it into the world's largest speaker. And as the sun rose, they played Bach through this tiny little Dutch village as the sun rose. And I remember being a little girl as my grandfather told me this story of turning this dam into a large speaker and how the sun was rising and Bach was just being...
It's a ceremony in itself. Yes.
And that is ceremony. And it was so beautiful the way he said everybody came out from their homes and they were so delighted.
Yeah.
They didn't get permission to do this. They were so delighted and enamored. And they were celebrated for what they achieved. And they held the record apparently for some time for the world's largest speaker, and it was made through.
Well, maybe you're too close to see it, but you seem to have some of your grandfather in your own bones and his way of creating large-scale sound systems and doing exactly. things that maybe he's told not to do or isn't told to do. And
exactly.
moreover, that's a form of gift in itself, of creating like a collective experience through sort of creating a work of art. And
and it's just it's so beautiful. And sometimes it's hard to recognize, perhaps, if somebody, it's almost like speaking a different language.
Well, everyone's journey is unique, right? There's one of my favorite Ram Dass stories is when the Maharaji asked him about his mother. And his mother, in his mind, was just some New England mother, sort of a housewife. He's like, what about mm-hmm, my mother? Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, your mother is a... very high soul, like very, very evolved. And he's just like, you must have the wrong woman because, my mother is, I'm the evolved soul. Not. And then it really, because he trusted in the Maharaji to sort of know everything about him and he had proven all these sort of mental miracles for him, that it suddenly made him think very differently about his relationship to everyone. Because like if my mother were mm-hmm. or is perhaps a soul that's quite evolved, and my view of her is something different. What if my mother's role in this incarnation is largely to help set him up to do what he's doing? And there's this large tapestry of co-creation that's so beyond anything we can conceive that there's a beauty.
You're cutting out.
Can you hear me now? Mm-hmm. There's a beauty in there's a beauty in that self-sacrifice. For souls. So it's just a good lesson in that maybe we never really know. We never really know. Like everyone's dance is unique and important and it's different. It's different. I wanted to, before we...
Absolutely. I'm bringing...
Go ahead. I know there's probably some delay.
I'm bringing my mom to Burning Man about... Yeah. So my talking about moms, I'm bringing my mother to Burning Man.
That's awesome.
So I'm so excited about that because my mom very much, I've never really seen her enjoy ceremony. It's not something that was really part of our life. My mom loves the outdoors. And so when we grew up on property in a small rural town in Oregon. And we horses, right? That was our means of escape and our means of connection when we would go out on horseback, you know, for hours on a trail ride without any sound but the horse's hooves like clumping on the ground, and they would sway back and forth and take us through the trees and the wilderness, which is beautiful ceremony in itself. But I've never really got to experience art with my mom until recently. I bring her to a lot of events that I go to, and it's just amazing to see my mom light up in that environment because that's not probably her natural environment to be in. No. But she's joining along, and she's really excited to go to Burning Man, and I'm excited to share that with her.
Awesome. Well, this podcast is called 10 Laws with East Forest because it's riffing off the song 10 Laws about my friend who has his sort of laws that he uses to keep his ship of life sailing straight. And for him, that's the hunter-gatherer's code of 10. But, you know, it's just sort of like some things that he kind of has learned that helps him keep going straight for what he's aiming at. And I'm always like to ask people before we end if there's anything that you kind of have a practice or your own little law that works for you, or maybe sort of a daily routine, you know, how you like to start your day. Maybe Gordon, I could ask you first, like, is there, or it could be something you don't do. It's just something you've learned to cut out of your life. It could be as simple as like never eat bagels, but I'm curious, you know, it doesn't have to be too profound, but what works for you?
Oh, I think taking, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever the milestone is, the check, kind of that personal check-in typically can happen at the beginning of the year or midway through the year or every few months, or, you know, if it's a lunar cycle or whatever it might be. But that time when you kind of take inventory of what I think we get caught up in to-do lists and things that we want to accomplish. And I think that there's a value in kind of the stop doing list, and to
the think stop doing list. That's a
the
very
stop
cool
doing
phrase.
List as yes. opposed to the to do list.
Mm-hmm. And, is that on your to do list? Is this like take a break?
Yeah, I guess it's on the to do list to think about those things that you really should maybe stop doing if it's not serving you any longer. And that's just kind of the first one that comes to mind. You know, I think, especially in the beginning of the new year, people, you know, have New Year's resolutions. And, for me, over the years, I've come to a place where I those aren't as effective. I always like to think about, you know, what should I maybe stop doing versus right. what am I going to start doing? And just also just clear the list a little bit. I think that everyone's caught up in being busy, and it's almost like the glorification of busyness in our society. I definitely have come to an awareness around not just using that word track of, oh, I'm so busy. I'm just busy, busy, busy. And as if busy is this good thing. And
yeah. And then you die. Yeah.
And then you die. Exactly.
Right.
And it's almost, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, that I think we're all aware of that, you know, it's almost like who's the busiest, as if that's that combined with what I should stop doing, I think are pretty effective for me.
Well, every teaching, I feel like, you tend to learn, it sort of comes down to, it's about peeling away an onion to something that's already there versus adding on layers to some form of discovery. Like enlightenment, in my experience as an idea, is something that is merely uncovered. Mm-hmm. And so the not doing is a way of creating space, perhaps, for that to be heard. It's creating room for that which is, that which you are, to exist. Everything else is sort of the trappings of the experience. I mean, there is nothing else, right?
Yep.
Except that moment. So that's really beautiful. Mm. Yeah. What about you, Kate?
I guess for me, it's, I guess if I were to strip all the layers of the onion away, what I always remind myself in my ritual is to come back to what I have found to be true for me. What do I feel like is inherent? What do I feel like is real? And the word that encompasses that for me is love. I feel like love is at the root of everything I do that seems to come from this place of truth. That, and then whenever I am around another person and I can see that they're peeling away their layers that I haven't found yet. I haven't found yet there to be an exception to the rule that at the end of the day, all we really want is to love and be loved. And so for me, it's with everything I do to remember that, to remember that with interactions between other people for my reason, to start with why am I doing something? And it's to come back to this place of love, which is, you know, there's a lot of other words that you could put to that. And love has some, you know, meaning for some people that perhaps doesn't quite fit exactly what I'm trying to describe. But it's that place of connection, union, and understanding, a place of equality, that we are just reflections of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I've thought of the idea that if you want to say all is one and you call that God or the universe, let's call it God, and we break off from that to go on some form of journey to understand that which is not. And through that journey, we're essentially these souls, the fingertips, the branches, the tips of this greater entity, all the same thing, but we're yearning to be part of the thing that we know deep down that we already are. And through that mm-hmm. yearning, is the yearning to return to that. And through that, I think there is a sense of that union. And love is essentially a word that represents a feeling of perhaps what mm-hmm. that base energy and that base consciousness is. So
I hear
you saying it's sort of like tapping into that feeling and having your actions and your day-to-day awareness be rooted in that.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. Just remembering, so love for me is the word that represents that feeling. And it's the word that I use to remember what that space yeah. feels like.
Beautiful. So you guys are on the web in a few places. How can we find like events that we did together that you're going to be doing? I know you're going to Bonnaroo soon and you're getting a new space soon. And I'm trying to convince you to do an East Forest ceremony thing. And you guys are busy.
It is so where can
folks find you each?
You can find us Walter Yoga is a great place to start. So you can look at Walter Yoga on Facebook or Instagram. Then you can also look at like our personal social media. I'm Kate Swarm, and you can find me Kate Swarm Yoga on Facebook, just Kate Swarm on Instagram. We have websites as well, so you can just Google it. Lots of stuff will come up there. And then Gordon?
Yeah, you can just find me at Gordon Ogden on Instagram, and then same with Facebook. And as Kate mentioned with Walter, there's Walter Productions and Walter Yoga are both great places, both Instagram and Facebook.
Do you guys not do the Twitter thing?
We do the Twitter. I do the Twitter thing. You can find me on Gordon Ogden on Twitter, and then Walter Productions, and Walter Yoga's not on Twitter.
Walter Yoga's not. Why not? Just did they rub you the wrong way?
I don't know.
Isn't it funny how it's like there's a trifecta of social media, and some people are. There's a lot of people like that. They have their two favorites, or there's a lot of Twitter devotees, and they don't like the others, and.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I used to really not pay attention to Twitter, but now it seems like within music, it seems like, you know, producers and DJs and they're all on Twitter for sure.
Yeah.
I found that as we interact with more artists kind of in the festival world, it seems like they're all on Twitter, and that really became apparent as we travel with Calliope, which is our main sound stage. And, you know, we're seeing all of these artists and performers tagging and wanting to know where they can find Walter and Calliope on Twitter. So that kind of shifted my perspective a little bit on Twitter.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Do you use Twitter?
Yeah.
And do you use Trevor Twitter?
Yeah, I stay away from both. No, I'm the same with all three mediums. I'm on all of them, but I've pulled out as far as my own. Like, mm-hmm. I try not to even open the app. I'm taking a bit of a fast, and so I'm providing content for it, and I'm using it as a tool. But I'm, you know, for the time being, I'm trying not to. To spend too much of my personal time getting too deep into the rabbit hole. And that's just, maybe that speaks to my own weaknesses, but maybe, I don't know. I'm just trying to cleanse myself a bit of some digital cobwebs that are deep in there.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Dude, do you, man. Do whatever makes your heart sing.
Yeah, I've noticed that it like helps me focus a little bit more on the creative process when I'm not as focused on like the other stuff. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, but... Sometimes I get caught up in like some of the bullshit going on some of it, and like I'm a human like anybody else, and like, you know, the wrong comment here or something there, it's just like, I just, you know what, I don't need that right now. Like, I just don't need that.
Totally.
So it's been helpful.
And you only have so much capacity, right? So, and creative capacity as well. Like if I'm having to create a bunch of visual media,
yeah.
How much time am I going to have to like conceptualize a ceremony that I'm
goes back to what you were kind of saying at the beginning, like your attention, I've said this before, your attention is your currency, and you know, you only have so many hours in the day, and where you want to put that is your power these days, and that's what the companies are vying for. So it's up to
Absolutely.
You how you where you want to put it, and you can use them as your tool or you cannot, or whatever you want to do in the world, but that is sort of your personal power these days. And that goes for the same when you turn it inward, and it's like, you know, spending a few minutes even on your inner world and turning that attention and turning the microphone the other way around, you find as, wow, this is a pretty powerful tool that I have, because even a small portion of it, when I turn the camera around, makes a certain profound difference on my understanding of it, who it is to be me.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, cool, guys. Thank you. Thank you for talking. I hope to see you face to face soon. I'm sad I can't go to Bonnaroo with you, but I know you guys are going to rock it.
Yes.
And
yeah, we'll miss you there for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be an adventure.
We're going to absolutely. And we are going to have you out for a ceremony soon. We are in the works of all the planning.
Yeah. Well, we're just starting to do the first one. So the first one's going to be at 1440. Yeah, it's going to be epic. And then there's another one in Dallas. So it's starting to happen. And I'm really excited to be merging like concert with ritual.
Cool.
And not be like, there's no reason. Let's just like break down the walls and just make it more of a co-creative alchemical thing and go deep, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Well, blessings to you both.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. This was a lot of fun. We got to do this more often.
Yeah, for sure. Start.
Make this a ritual, just hanging out together.
Absolutely.
I love it. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thanks.
All right. Bye. Have a good night.
Talk to you soon.
Well, there you go. Thank you to Kate and Gordon. Check out more of their work. Maybe you'll see them on the Playa or some party somewhere. If you're out and about, you'll probably run into that Walter crew. This music you're hearing in the background is Karen, the Different Sleep remix, and that was on the Karen Deluxe album, which is the collaborative record I did with Keith Sweaty. And that's about it for now. I'm not going to bore you with more of my meanderings. We all have shit to do, right? So keep walking your walk. Don't take any shit, but if you do, do it with grace.
Just two souls in this spiral.